I'm going to call this meeting to order, Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors for June 24th, 2014. Please arise for a salute to our nation's flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we will move to a public comment. If anybody from the public would like to comment on a non-agenda item, this would be the time. If you want to comment on an agenda item, you'd have to wait until that item comes up. We limit public comment to 5 minutes. Anybody from the public? Okay, state your name for the record, please.
Carmen Sabatino, former mayor of Modesto. I have good news for you. The sheriff has just informed me that he's there for 3, 4, or 5 terms. So, that's good. My message this morning is that I'm bringing you something that you can do absolutely nothing about because it is history. A good friend of mine said about the battle, I guess, between myself and some people in the community. He said, well, you know, it's only fair, Mayor. You poked them in the eye. Why wouldn't they poke back? So in developing the history of this city, and I think some of you will like it, some of you will not, but I went back to a press conference of December 9th, 2002. I have distributed a packet that will assist you in understanding the problems that confront the city of Modesto and the county of Stanislaus. Last Wednesday, the local newspaper linked my name to corruption. In that story, we learned that there are 3 simultaneous investigations in process. The first one is the district attorney's investigation of the events surrounding Village 1. The second is the district attorney's investigation of the mayor of Modesto, based on unsubstantiated information provided by an out-of-town lawyer who was funded by unknown anonymous clients. Well, we know who the clients are. The third is the sheriff's investigation of the mayor of Modesto. I suspect that the activity came because of a request from Supervisor Ray Simon. If not by Simon, then who is it that caused the county sheriff to intrude into the district attorney's responsibilities? It was an expensive abuse of authority to engage in a fishing expedition to look into the personal and business life of the mayor of Modesto. History has shown that that amount was $685,000, maybe more. I have a question. My question is, why is so much taxpayer money being spent to investigate a mayor whose commitment to open, honest government makes him the enemy of the backroom conspirators? The issues mentioned in the newspaper should be investigated by law enforcement, not politicians, but they should be investigated. And law enforcement was acting at the direction of politicians. Now, this is 2002. My request is that the district attorney impanel a criminal grand jury and task them to help investigate the real issues and ferret out the real corrupt officials in Stanislaus County. Since the district attorney was understaffed, he should welcome the assistance of the grand jury and the Internal Revenue Service. The real corruption in Stanislaus County involves the invasion of the courts via the county council and district attorney's manipulation of the grand jury. The real corruption is $58 million shortfall in Village 1. The major player in Village 1 is Mike Zegaris and his political machine. The real corruption is the purchase of a $14 million farm adjacent to Diablo Grande. The property was appraised at $10.75 million, and the money for the property was obtained by, excuse me, overcharging the ratepayers. The real corruption is the violation of the most sacred component of freedom, the foiled attempt to manipulate an election. Interestingly enough, the mayor is not a participant in any of these issues. I was elected in 1999, despite the local newspaper and the $250,000 spent by my opponents. I promised open and honest government, promises made, promises kept. Make no mistake, the investigation will reveal corruption, not only in the public sector, but also business people in the private sector. Thank you very much. You will be receiving regular newsletters on current issues that you can do something about. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Is there anybody else from the public who wishes to speak on a non-agenda item? Okay, please state your name for the record.
Emerson Drake, 27-year resident of Modesto. Got another little milestone there. I feel kind of strange because this is the first time that I've either participated in or watched one of these proceedings when, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, gentlemen, that didn't go against my 5 minutes. We'd be real flowery, okay? No offense to anybody. First time I haven't heard a diatribe about Common Core, how terrible it is. You know, I was at an LCR, Latino Community Roundtable meeting a couple months ago, and he got up and spoke, and he told us how we're going to hell in a handbasket. We're not even teaching algebra anymore. And Susan Whalen is right across the table from me, board member. And she whispers to her friend, I guess it was a public meeting. She goes, should I stand up and say, yes, we do teach it. We just call it something different now. And the gentleman that was with her said, this isn't the time. So, you know, I think somebody's got to stand up and say, maybe it is the time. We rank 25th in math, 16th overall against other industrialized nations. Yet it's the math they're afraid of. You know, I understand people's concern about government, especially the group that's against Common Core, the Tea Party Patriots. Of course, they'll go on about Agenda 21 for hours. But they speak out constantly, but you never hear the total truth. If you go to one of their little videos that they put online, it always starts out with a guy going, make sure your speakers are turned up. And then they have the little guy that writes, and it's so cute. Very little reality to it, but that's okay. Everybody's entitled. I mean, it's on the internet. Of course, it's true, right? All those bloggers know that. I guess my concern is that there's so much misinformation out there. One of the things that they're doing is a group called ACE, Accelerated Christian Education. It's in Louisiana. They're actually concerned about creationism versus evolution. That they've actually got a textbook out there. And this is real. This isn't real. In the Eternity Christian Academy in Westlake, Louisiana, they actually have a textbook that says the Loch Ness Monster is real. And this proves the dinosaurs existed with men. They said they have scientific fact. The dinosaurs and people were around at the same time. I don't want to get into a creationism argument. But Common Core establishes two things. What people should know at the end of a school year and what they should be able to do. Instead of teaching to the test, we teach you to think. And I do not understand why anybody under God's green earth would be concerned about that. But apparently some are. Second topic before it starts to change colors. We heard some interesting discussions. I'm going to get a little cat for that, by the way. Say you won't use it, but you use it anyway. There's been some discussions about our district attorney. I waited until after the election because I wanted to go through the public record request to find out some information. Now let's flash back to about 12 to 15 years ago. The Board of Education was asked, what's the dropout rate in Modesto? They said, we don't know. What do you mean you don't know? You're the Board of Education. It's hard keeping track of all that information. I wish I could do the young lady. It's hard. Well, the truth was they didn't want to know because in some areas it was over 40%, the dropout rate in the city of Modesto. Some areas it still borders on 35. But the fact was they didn't want to be held accountable for their job educating the students and the kids in this city. So they didn't keep track. Well, the public record request, I said, well, how many... I asked the district attorney, where did the request come from and how many per year from 2011 to 2013? I'm going to paraphrase, but I won't be taking the words too far out, not out of context at all. Well, we don't know because we don't keep track. I was told that they have limited resources, and if you guys get the copies of the public record request, I'll be happy to forward it to you. We have limited resources, and we just don't have the time. Well, the busiest year I can figure is 2012 when they had 25. That means that almost just slightly over twice a month, somebody had to say, DEA 711 or 912, whatever. It just doesn't matter. The point is, it's so easy to keep track of that, but we don't want accountability. And I think when we see the NSA tracking all our emails, able to download your loads at the drop of a hat, apparent. I can care less, honestly, except for the issue of privacy. Now, if our district attorney wants to basically rubber stamp, because she doesn't track that information, they're quick to tell you, by law, we don't have it. Well, you could, but you just don't keep it. Why? Because we don't want to know. Well, if you're signing your name to a court request, oh, now it beeps. If you're signing your name to a court request, you ought to just take the time to jot it down, the date, and who requested it. I don't think that's unreasonable. I'm not talking about anything nefarious, but I think the public has a right to know. And just like the school board, if you don't track it, nobody knows what we're doing. Isn't it time that we knew what we were doing? Thank you very much for your extra 30 seconds.
And thank you, Mr. Drake. Is there anybody else who would like to make a comment on a non-agenda item? Okay, seeing none, we will now move to the consent calendar. Does any member of this board wish to pull an item from consent?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like item B5 and B11 pulled from consent.
And anyone else?
C1.
And Jim, B1, sorry.
Oh, my. You're just like Patterson City Council.
Yeah.
Okay, the items pulled are item B1, B5, B11, and C1. Anybody from the audience wish to pull an item from consent outside of these four? Okay, seeing none, let's vote on what we can all agree on. There's a motion to approve the remainder.
A motion to approve consent calendar.
Except for those four items.
And I will second that.
Okay, motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, motion's carried. 5-0. Okay, I'll just take them in order. We'll start out with item B1. Pull this out. Okay. I'll repeat this consent.
Hi, Jody.
Hi, good morning.
Sorry I didn't give you a heads up on this, but just real quick, there's a couple quick questions on this. This has to do with the conflict attorneys. And so I guess I wanted to understand the contract. You know, we have a contract for the conflict one and contract for conflict two, almost identical amounts. Conflict two kicks in when there's more than several cases, I guess, several different defendants, I guess. Is that right?
Yes, Supervisor Withrow, you are correct that in the filing of criminal matters, the district attorney may have many co-defendants to a case, or there may be other legal conflicts that are present from unrelated legal matters. And in those cases, the cases always first go to our public defender's office. And then when the public defender may be required to declare a conflict, it would go to the conflicts one firm. And then if there's a conflict there, it goes to the conflicts two firm.
Okay. And who conflicts one versus conflicts two? Is so one of the firms is conflict one and the other firm is conflict two, or is that just...
Yeah, no, that is correct. The firm of Grease, Ornstein, and Hurdle is our conflicts one firm, okay. And Perry & Associates are conflicts two.
Okay, and so when I look at the contracts that we're approving here, they're almost identical as far as the dollar amounts for each firm, the monthly amount we're going to pay conflicts one and two. But when I look at the caseload, conflicts two, which I'm is pretty much half of what conflicts one is, right? The amount of cases that conflicts two sees are about half as much as conflicts one. Is that right? When I look at this little schedule here of signed cases, and that would make sense to me, I guess, because there aren't very many times that it goes to conflicts two as often as it goes to conflicts one. Is that right?
Yeah, what we're looking at in this total here would be we have charted out the juvenile misdemeanor and felony cases as well. What is very challenging is the level of more advanced or complex cases that each firm may carry. And what we haven't charted out, and I apologize, we could have done a better job of this for you, is showing what those cases would look like, which is where the majority of work is actually done in the firm. So what we're really talking about here are murder cases, and when each firm is carrying an equivalent number or similar number of highly complex cases, then you would expect that similar workload between the two firms.
Okay, because that was my concern when I look at this, and we're paying both of them the same, but it looks like one's only seen about half as many cases as the other one, and is getting the same dollar amount. But you're saying maybe from an hour-wise, and that was the other thing, that was my next question, was the whole purpose of this is because it is to save the county money by putting these people, these two law firms on a retainer. In essence, it will save us money as compared to having to go out and pay on an hourly basis any time that our public defender is conflicted out. It's cheaper this way. That's the purpose of this, right?
Yeah, and what is difficult is we're not reporting out on the number of hours worked between the two different firms. There is a difference in terms of the complexity and the mix of cases amongst the firms. So we haven't reported out on the hours. That is accurate, and I can say extreme confidence that the contracts that are before you with the two conflict firms represent the best value to us in terms of representation for indigent defense services, which the county is required to pay for. If cases slip past these two contracts and go to the appointed counsel from the courts, our costs go up dramatically from there.
Okay.
Because those firms are paid on, or I'm sorry, those attorneys are paid on an hourly basis from that point forward. We've capped our exposure with a fixed cost with these two firms.
Okay, so you're saying that even though Conflicts 2 sees half as many cases, that they're putting in just as many hours as Conflicts 1, probably.
I can't say that definitively because I don't have those specific numbers, but I can tell you in the work that we've done with both cases that we're very convinced that the compensation that's available for them is available in each of the contracts to each of the two firms is providing good value to the county in terms of relationship to our alternatives with the local defense.
Could we get the hours, Judge? Could we get those and just see how much?
We can request. I'm not aware that we've asked them to track their cases in that respect in the past, but I'll have to look.
Okay. Yeah, I guess if you feel comfortable, that's fine. I'd love for you to come back, though, have those two firms provide us with the amount of hours that they put in a year and really look at that and see, I guess in my world, you know, on an hourly, the way that I charge and the way attorneys charge, I know everything's on an hourly basis, and I'd be interested to see just how many hours they actually do put in a year and how that plays out as far as the dollar amount that we paid them for that year and how much per hour we're actually paying them as compared to, and I know you guys have probably done your homework on this, but I guess if you could help me to get a better comfort with this, that would be great.
Yeah, I appreciate your question, Supervisor Withrow. I really understand it, and I'd be happy to try to do some more research for you and bring that information back for you.
Okay, that'd be great. Thank you.
Is there any further questions to staff? Mr. Withrow, what would you like to do? Continue this or vote on it the way it is?
You know, I'm comfortable with approving this now, but with the understanding that you guys will do some homework and come back to us with hours and prove the point you're telling me here right now.
I'll have to come back with the information that may be available. If we haven't asked them to track those hours yet, they may not be able to provide them to us, but I'm going to go forward with them, have those discussions, and try to determine how we can statistically represent the value that's being provided to the county to the firms.
And I'm confident they track their hours, just knowing the way my accounting firm works and the law firms. I'm sure they're tracking their hours on these cases. And so it'd be great just to get that from them. So, okay. Okay, I'll make a motion that we would, can I do that now? Is that, I'd make a motion to approve this, and we'll hopefully get more information back from
yes.
Okay.
Second. Okay, motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, motion's carried 5-0.
Thank you very much.
Now move to agenda item D5, purchasing card audit.
Good morning, Jenna DeMartini, Supervisors, Mr. Risen, and Mr. Dorn, Lauren Klein, Auditor Controller.
Ms. Chairman, I'd just like to hear a report on some of the findings that were found in this audit.
A summary of the report, the agenda item
list. I think it's important that we discuss it.
Okay. Summary overall, there were four departments that we audited. First of all, let me back up a little bit. We typically in the past when the internal audit division was in existence, we went every year and looked at every department and every agency that was utilizing the purchasing cards. Since the internal audit division was disbanded in 2011, other staff in our general ledger division is absorbing these duties, and what we're now doing is basically doing a 50-50, a two-year cycle. So we're not looking at every single department every year. It's roughly about 16 to 17 or 18 departments. We're doing a risk assessment ahead of time. We're looking at those departments that we haven't viewed before, and then we're also looking at prior findings and determining if there's any departments that we feel are higher risk. And if that's the case, we're going to go out every year and take a look at their activity. That's the case here. We looked at 19 departments. This is fiscal year 11-12, and we are behind because we're absorbed these duties. My general ledger division is actually acting part-time as doing the internal audit work. Of the 19 departments, there were four departments that had no findings whatsoever on the executive summary report, and that was DCSS, Health Services Agency, Library, and LAFCO. Then there were, one, two, three, four, five departments that only had one finding, and that finding had to do with a department head listing for, there's an annual report where the department head is required to look at the needs and limits of all the holders in there who has purchasing cards by their department, and the need for those individuals to maintain a purchasing card and the limits. Animal Services, Board of Supervisors, Clerk Recorder, Parks and Recreation and Planning, we did not see documentation that, certification and documentation that needs and limits was reviewed. I will say about that there was a change in the past. In the past, the Auditor Controller's Office used to send out we used to print those reports out and send them out to all the departments. In the system, we use Bank of America is our bank that we use for purchasing cards. There's a system, an online system that we use, and it's called Works, and we have the capability for the departments themselves to print this report so that department heads could review and certify. That was changed in 2009, 2010, and I believe the only reason that these findings exist there is there was a lack of understanding or a lack of communication that the departments were then now required to, staff themselves were required to print those reports and provide them to the department head. And then we had a couple of departments that had some larger issues that are listed on the executive summary reports themselves.
I can take it from here. 15 out of 19 departments, according to your staff report, had major findings.
Right.
That concerns me. So looking in a little bit further, we have stuff where some employees approved and reconciled their own charges.
Correct.
We, the county, spent taxpayer dollars on lodging that was never used. We, the taxpayers of this county, paid for hotels that didn't correlate with conferences that they attended. One question that I have for you, so the Board of Supervisors didn't, is there any credit cards for the Board of Supervisors?
No.
One, okay.
Okay.
Non-elected.
Right.
I think that's important to note. So anyways, I just feel that maybe our credit card policy is not working if 15 out of 19 departments audited had major findings. Kind of surprised me.
Okay. First,
I want to thank you and your department for the work you do and the workload that we put on you. This isn't coming at the auditor. This is coming at our policy, saying, is our policy, one, strong enough, two, being enforced? And on some of these, were they reimbursed? Were they reimbursed for someone who booked a hotel room that didn't use it? Were they reimbursed for lodging that didn't correlate with a conference?
If they were reimbursed, that's part of the work that is done. We ask if the fees are reimbursed, and if it's not noted on the report, then they were not. Some of these findings have to do with prior employees who are no longer employed.
Thank you.
Okay.
Are there any further questions of staff? Anybody from the audience wish to comment on this item? Okay. We'll bring it back to the board then.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion to approve this report, accept the report, thank the auditor, controller, and her staff for a job well done, and also direct the CEO to prepare a written report back to the Board of Supervisors with the answers of which of these were repaid and his evaluation on whether or not we need to change our policy or what we need to do to enforce it properly.
Okay. There's a second to that motion.
Second.
Okay, motion is made and seconded. Any further comment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Okay, motion is carried 5-0. We will now move to agenda item B11. Mr. O'Brien?
I'd like a quick staff report on this item, please.
Okay. Good morning. I'm RJ Palomino, Director of Aging and Veteran Services. Supervisor O'Brien, you just want me to go over the report that we are going
yes.
to provide. Just very quickly, the contracts, we are proposing to renew contracts with first of all, a renewal with for the meals program, which is the congregate meals and the home delivered meals, renewal of a contract with Howard Training Center, which is our current provider. We're basically, for the home delivered meals program, we are leaving the same amount of service meals that we're providing for the current year, which is at $135,600. That puts us roughly around 11,300 meals a month, which is what we've been providing the current year and also, I believe, the previous year since we negotiated this contract with Howard Training Center. That amount of meals just leaves us with serving the priority of the senior meals program, which is, you know, homebound seniors who have no way of getting out of their homes and have no one to provide meals for them. There's not any significant that we are aware of through our monitoring process. There are no significant reasons for us to have to not renew this particular contract with Howard Training Center. They're doing everything they can to manage the current contract and provide those meals to those seniors. The congregate meals program, on the other hand, we were very pleased to hear this current year that there was a small base increase from the federal funding from Older Americans Act, and so we decided to for next fiscal year we're going to increase a day on all the congregate sites that we are providing the meals at. We were a couple of years ago when we negotiated a contract with Howard Training Center. Through a request for proposal process, we had contracted for the meals for the congregate sites to provide meals three times a week. We pretty much stay within the same funding that the last couple of years. And this current year, I'm glad that we're going to be able to provide an additional day. So each congregate site throughout the county, which is 13 sites, will receive an additional day. So they will be, rather than just serving 3 days a week, they will be serving meals 4 days a week throughout the county. And then we also, this last fiscal year, we received a notification from our current provider for the senior employment program, the United Cerebral Palsy, that they no longer wanted to renew the contract with the Area Agency on Aging to provide supplemental employment to seniors. We have a small grant from the California Department of Aging that provides supplemental employment subsidized employment, I'm sorry, for seniors in our county. It's very limited. We used to have 9 spots for subsidized employment for low-income seniors. That means that a number of organizations who have needs for the skills of older workers can employ these older workers that meet certain requirements, such as being low income, to supplement their social security. We also learned during this current year that the California Department of Aging was receiving an additional amount of funding from the Department of Labor, and they had us kind of discounted. We wanted to take 5 additional spots. So that gives us 15 spots for this next coming year, and that is subsidized employment. We issued a request for proposal with the assistance of our current General Services Agency, we were able to we're proposing to issue the contract to a new provider, which is the Third Jobs for Progress from San Joaquin Valley. They were the success bidder.
How many people responded for that proposal?
For the request for proposal process, my understanding is there were 2 providers
okay.
who responded.
And who was the other? Because it's not listed in the staff agenda.
AARP.
Okay. And not having that information, in my mind, needs to be part of a staff report, part of a board agenda, so that the board has all the information while making a decision. All that's presented to us is who you want us to approve.
And you mean in terms of the the senior employment program?
Senior employment program.
And we are requesting approval of that particular provider because they were through the request for proposal process that General Services Agency assisted us with. They were the successful bidder.
And what I'm saying is the Board of Supervisors need to know everybody who applied for that so that we can ensure that that wasn't a correct award.
Okay, we can provide that information.
I'll think about Public Works today because their request for proposal on the agenda today on D1 clearly shows everybody who submitted a bid and why they chose who they chose. And so as a Board of Supervisors, we can look at it and say, yes, that is a correct awarding of that bid. In this case, we're lacking the information. We don't have the information of all the bidders.
And it's very valid and fair comment, Supervisor. We'll
I've made it before.
These list all the vendors.
And it just, I'm getting more and more the feeling that staff presents to us what they want. And it's this Board of Supervisors that determines it with all the information provided.
Okay. My apologies for that. I will be more than happy to provide that information.
Very good. Thank you. That's all.
Thank you.
Questions.
Any further comments of staff? Questions? Anybody from the audience wish to comment on this item?
Emerson Drake again, very quickly. I thank you for your comments. As we all see, the Modesto City.
You're done.
Come on now. No, it's fine. We've seen what happens when a group of the Modesto City Council rubber stamps something when the staff doesn't even know what's going on, but they make the recommendations anyway.
It's not entirely applicable here, I understand that. But I do appreciate your diligence, all of you, and especially the comments state. That's all. Thank you.
Anyone else wish to comment on this item? And I'll bring it back to the board for action.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be abstaining for this for lack of information.
We put it over? What do you say we put it over then? Bring it back.
Whatever your motion is.
Let's see if, maybe if I could ask Ms. Bellamy, what's the effective date if this comes back next week, July 1st?
That's correct. The services begin at July 1st for both providers.
So we could potentially be one day out of contract.
Which in the case of a meals program, we could amend a contract for 1 month.
Meals program, we can approve all the information that's there in the meals program. It's okay. The senior employment jobs.
So can we do that, just approve the
meals program? I'll make a motion to approve the contract for the senior meals as listed in the agenda and to continue the SURE job senior employment program.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The motion's carried 5-0. Okay, this will bring us to our last item on consent. Item C1. This is the Park Lawn Sewer Improvement Project.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, Mr. Eisen, Mr. Doring, Matt Machado, Director of Public Works, and I'm here today with Angela Freitas, Director of Planning and Community Development. The item before you is the result of a great partnership that we secured recently with the county at the lead. Planning and Public Works secured a contract with the state of California, and we also executed an agreement with City of Modesto to create a great partnership to see this project through. This is the construction of sewer infrastructure into the Park Lawn neighborhood. Additionally, we had a great partnership and quite a bit of help from CRLA, the California Rural Legal Assistance Group. And so together, we have before you today a number of staff recommendations, including the award of a construction contract to Knife River Construction. They were the lowest bidder of three bidders. The low bid did come in 16% below the engineer's estimate. A couple other quick highlights. The grants from the state totaled right at $4.9 million. This will see the project through. It also includes money to pay a connection fee to the city of Modesto to encourage all homeowners, there are 327 parcels in Park Lawn, to connect to sewer. It'll make it easier for them and more economical for them to connect sooner than later. So it's a good project. It includes construction and connection fees. With that, I could open up for any questions that you may have.
Some questions to staff?
Yeah. The reason I pulled this is because just what Matt had articulated, it's a partnership. It's a good partnership. Funds are coming from a third party, the state of California. And it's a partnership between Modesto, San Luis County, with the help of CRLA. And we're taking care of essentially a needy community. And with the loss of redevelopment, these types of things are becoming more and more difficult to do. And I know Keys was the last project that was done on some redevelopment, I think. But we still have Airport District Sewer and Empire Drainage to do. And it's going to take creative partnerships to do this. My question for Angela, the reason you're up here, is I wanted to ask about the sewer hookup. We have the money. The money was forwarded for Modesto sewer hookup, but there's the actual physical hookup to the house. Is there any funds available for the folks?
There are funds available for income-qualified folks. We have a housing rehab program that's administered. The funding comes to the county, and it's administered through the Housing Authority. And right now, there's about $400,000, $450,000 that could be used for qualified individuals.
Okay. Well, this is good. Now, I wanted to pull it, Supervisor DeMartini or Chairman DeMartini, has worked hard in that neighborhood along with the back, and I think we're doing the backbone, or it's coming before us on the airport district. So, do you want to talk about that really quick, the backbone?
Sure. So, in fact, we started advertising yesterday, and the backbone, as we talked about, is a trunk line up one of the major streets, curb. And as we receive bids, we'll be in front of this board to for your consideration to award that. That'll be funded primarily with CDBG funds, if awarded, and we'll see how those bids come in. We hope they come in as competitive as this one did, and we can get as much pipe in the ground as possible. We'll follow up with pursuing a similar state grant for the remainder of the airport sewer project, and hopefully we're successful there. I would add one more thing on Parklawn. We anticipate starting construction the end of July and having it complete by the end of November, so it'll happen very quickly. We're working very closely with the community, because it'll be built in phases to, you know, to ensure access and safe working conditions. So it's going to happen quickly. So if you have a chance to come out and take a look at it, I'd be happy to take you on a tour, and we can see some construction activity.
Yeah. Thank you again.
Appreciate it.
Further questions of staff? I'd just like to make some comment on this. This is the last section of South Modesto to be hooked up to the sewer system. It was Bret Hart was first, and Shackelford, and then Parklawn. So this completes the sewer project in that entire area. This has been a long time in coming, and it's, of course, you know, the funding of this has been the holdup. You know, is we have to rip up the streets and put in the sewer lines. But, you know, we have a good partnership with the state of California on this. CRLA has been extremely helpful on this, and it's these types of cooperation and partnerships that get, you know, complex projects like this done. It's been just a good all the way around on this. I'm glad to see it coming. So it's only 327 houses, but it was the last parcel in the district to get hooked up to sewer. Fortunately, we don't allow subdivisions to be built anymore. They're on septic tanks, so we're not going to have this problem in the future. And is there anybody from the audience who wishes to comment on this item?
Motion to approve.
Okay, I'm going to second that motion there because it is my district. So, motion's been made and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion's carried 5-0. Thank you. Okay, that completes our consent calendar. Not quite in record time, but we got it done. I'm going to take item B7 out of order and A7, and put off our scheduled matter after that. So Lee, would you like to come up?
Hello to the board. How are you all today? Lee Lundrigan, Stanislaus County Clerk, Recorder, and Registrar of Voters. I wanted to say hello to Chairman V. Martini, the board, CEO Risen, and our County Council, Jack Doring. We bring before you today some happy news. This is the acceptance on behalf of the board of the certified statement of the results of the gubernatorial primary election from June 3rd. Stanislaus County had some interesting figures on this election. We had 211,277 voters that were eligible to vote in this election. Of that, 26.43% voted, 10% or 10,000, excuse me, at the polls, and 45,000 plus by mail. So definitely, we are turning over and voting more by mail than we are at the polls. On election night, our figures came out very fast and clean. For that, I want to thank our wonderful staff, our fabulous IT staff, and our management staff, who two of them are with me today in the audience. They do a marvelous job, and they are way to be commended. I just get to stand up here and tell you the stuff. So, but they're really behind it, and we totally depend on them to turn out a wonderful election for this county. The Stanislaus County election was one of two that will take place this year. We are now preparing for the gubernatorial general election, which will be taking place in November. I put a press release out yesterday, which indicates just what's going to be taking place. But anyone who wishes to run in that election can take out the nomination documents that they would need to run by between the dates of July 14th and August 8th of 2014. Of that, there will be 16 cities and districts that will be in that election, 4 measures, and 12 state offices. The 12 state offices are going to be, I guess, what you'd call a runoff, because that's the, you know, the general election. The others are going to be new elections that will be brought before the voters. And the measures that we have thus far are Y and Z. Y for the city of Oakdale, which will be a sales tax extension. Z for the urban growth boundary measure for the city of Newman. And Turlock has two measures. We go back to the beginning of the alphabet, and that's A and B, electoral districts measure and a local road tax measure. So that's what's going to be coming up in November. You had any questions?
And isn't there also another growth proposal, the limiting growth in Modesto is being circulated?
It has not been brought before us. These are items that have already been brought to our attention and have been given letters for the election. So these are set for the election. The others I'm unaware of. Don't know about
that. I think they're looking at November 2015 for that one is when that's the gathering.
It's not going to be this year.
Yeah.
Okay. I understand you're the person in the state who get the results.
We were the very first in the state of California to complete our results, have our documents to the Secretary of State, so it's a pretty exciting moment for us. I believe this is the first we've ever been number one for the whole election. We've been number two a couple times, but the first time, so thank you very much. Thank you.
I see, not exactly your job on this, but what's the status of the controller's race in California? Because I understand that it's so close that they haven't been able to declare.
We have been contacted by some various groups in the state to determine what our cost of a recount would be. So that's all I can tell you is I think they're thinking about a recount. It is not for the number one position. It would be for the positions of 2 and 3 for the state controller's race. They have a variety of ways in which they could conduct that should they choose to. Should they choose to conduct a recount, they could ask for the whole state to recount at once and actually get a real number, or they could focus on those counties which they think are maybe close or they want to take a second look at and ask just for those counties to go first. So they have a variety of ways in which they could conduct it. We have not been conducted any further. We have to wait in Stanislaus for the last county, this is a new law that has come out, for the last county that has the same nominations and the same candidates that we have on our ballot to complete, and then 5 days after that they have to ask for a recount within that time period. So we have 15 different counties in which we share districts, and of course the largest one of that is the Senate. It is the current Berryhill seat, and that one goes all the way down the back of the state of California to Inyo County and has many, many counties involved in it. So until all of them are completed, we still are sitting waiting to see if we would have a recount. The state one would have to be everybody in the state complete, and then 5 days after that, and that has not happened yet.
I assume there would be funding from somebody to pay for this?
It would not come from this board. It should be paid for by whoever asks for it. So I would assume that they would start small and just ask for those counties where they have maybe questions or issues. And they can even ask specific areas. They can ask for different precincts to come up first. So if you're asking for a recount, you can ask them in several different manners and ways in which you wish it to be looked at. We always advise anyone who's interested in the election to come during the canvass period, because that's the period that's A, open to the whole public, B, free, you know, to the public. I mean, if you're a candidate, you can see what's going on and watch the whole process. And we often are taken up on that and have people come in and check it out. So There are a few other tidbits of information that I'll give the board right now, and it's always of interest, I know. We have e-sample ballots. 744 people of our 211,000 get their ballots by e-sample ballot. I know that the board has been very interested in that, and we, of course, are too. Every single sample ballot pamphlet, not the ballot itself, but just the sample that comes out, saves about $1 each when they get it online. So our suggestion is that a family, where they're getting two or three sample ballot pamphlets, sign up for a couple online and then maybe get one hard copy. And that would save the county. It's also good for them because it's the very first item that comes out electronically, and they can get it at E60. So they get it 60 days prior to the election. No one else gets theirs until about between 29 and 40 days before the election. So they're the first on their block to know. So that would be good. Anyway, I also wanted to, sorry for not saying this sooner, but I wanted to thank Supervisor O'Brien. He was your observer, and we did have several other observers for election night, and he was Johnny on the spot and watched everything and did a great job for you guys.
So, and there was no problems that night.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think the vote count went very well that night, very organized, and very impressed this time around to see how it all went down. Something that our clerk recorder has told us before, that some people in some very small precincts, the secret ballot is out the door. And I see, by looking at the results, exactly what she's talking about. You can actually see how the one ballot cast in certain precincts, who they voted for. And I really think the state legislature needs to take a look at that in order to keep, ballot secret.
If I could comment on that and give some clarification to what Supervisor O'Brien is mentioning, due to the trend of various districts to split up into trustee areas, so instead of voting at large for example, the City of Modesto, we'll use them as an example, instead of the City of Modesto just voting at large for the individuals who are running for council, they now have them voted in different districts. When those district lines lay on top of the county supervisor lines, the MID irrigation district, the schools, all of the different lines start going together. They do not draw them on the same, along the same streets, and therefore every once in a while they'll cut out areas that are very minutely small and maybe have one or two voters. And in that instance, when those voters vote, you see them on the statement of vote. So it's a little bit difficult to hide your vote. It's not that it's not still secret, but the way we report it and have to report by district, which is a state requirement, shows what that district did. And if that little precinct is just two people and they both vote the same, now if they both voted differently, I guess you could you could be concerned, but yeah, it can be like that. So any other questions I can answer for you?
Supervisor Withrow?
Yes.
Lee, you said that the sample ballots, it's about a dollar per ballot, so a couple $100,000 a year to send, is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah, so we could save, there'd be a lot of savings there.
It would be a great savings, right. And we put it, I wanted to thank one of our IT people from the county's IT area, Jeff Emmons, came up with the idea to put that little square on the front where you could check it with your phone and then go to the site and get right on to signing up for sample e-sample ballot pamphlet.
Right.
So he did a great job with that, and thank him, and of course his boss, Marcia Cunningham, who runs a great ship over there.
Great.
Any further questions? Okay, seeing none, anybody from the audience wish to comment on this item? Okay, is there a motion to accept the clerk recorder's statement of results?
So moved.
Okay, motion's been made. Is there a second?
I will second it.
Okay, motion's been made and seconded. We approve the clerk recorder's statement of results. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, motion's carried. 5-0.
Thank you very much. And now upon the conclusion and declaration of this board, I would like to thank those individuals who won. So congratulations to you both and all those
who were in the county as well, who were running for office.
Thank you, Lee. Okay. We will now move to our 9:05 scheduled matter. It's a few minutes past 9:05.
Good morning, Chairman DeMartini, board members, CEO Risen and County Council Storing, Jamie Yeagers, Director of Environmental Resources. We're bringing up the PowerPoint here so we can get started. Slideshow at the top. At the top. Over the right. Here. No, right here. Right here.
Sorry about that.
No problem. Okay. The item before you this morning is the proposed refuse collection rates for the 2014-15 year. Joining me at the table here is Brian Kumamoto. He's the Solid Waste Program Manager in DER. Just to give you a little bit of background, the unincorporated portions of Stanislaus County are divided into four separate franchise areas, and each of those areas contains a mixture of residential, commercial, and Dropbox customers. In exchange for franchise fees that the haulers pay, they receive the exclusive right to the residential and commercial accounts within their respective area. And the county retains the right to regulate the haulers and set the maximum refuse and haul rates. We have a system for our rate setting that establishes a base year, and that happens every 5 years. And staff worked with Hilton Farnkopf and Hobson last year and the franchise companies to develop a new base rate for refuse collection. This board adopted those new rates on June 18th of 2013, and they became effective July 1st. The years in between setting the base years, we refer to those as the intervening years, and there are four consecutive years following each new base year. So now we're in the first year of the index-based adjustments, where during this period the rates only change up or down due to a series of price indexes. And this is a snapshot of the various rate adjustment components. The first three are tied directly to the CPI that is used in our formula. The next is the FinCorp landfill disposal component, and reflect that as going down by a little over 2%, and that is due to the 90-day price rollback that you approved this spring to go into effect July 1st through September 30th. The next component is also tied to the CPI, and SRRF refers to the Stanislaus Resource Recovery Facility, or more commonly referred to as our waste disposal facility, or waste energy facility, excuse me. And the last that we're proposing to change this year is what's called the transfer component. We'll talk a little bit more about that on a slide later on in the presentation. But staff is recommending a 5% increase to that component. The proposed residential rate adjustments apply to 24,522 customers who have weekly service, and within the four franchise areas, the percentage increase would range from 1.73 on the low end to 1.9 on the high end. And on the next slide, you'll see what that looks like in dollars and cents. And what we're showing you here is the most common service that is selected, which is a single 90-gallon automated cart. And comparing the rates from current to proposed, the increase would range from 39 cents per month on the low end to 45 cents per month on the high end. The next slide is reflective of the proposed commercial rate adjustments, and there are just under 3,000 commercial bin accounts in the county. And the percentage increase would range from 1.78% on the low end to 1.94% on the high end. The most common commercial bin service is what we've reflected in this slide, and that is a two-yard container collected once per week. And here we show the current rates in comparison to the proposed rates. And those would change $1.26 per month on the low end to $1.65 per month on the high end. Moving on to proposed Dropbox rates, these are services that are subscribed to on an as-needed basis, and in this category, the board establishes only the haul charge for the container. And the percentage change we're recommending is 0.63 to 0.83 on the high end. Again, we're showing you just one category of a Dropbox container. It's kind of the middle size. On the small end, they range from 10 to 19 yards, and they have 30-yard container sizes and up. But for this category, you can see here also the current rates and the proposed rates. And we're recommending that those change between $1.35 and $1.72 on the high end. So going back to that transfer fee that we spoke about a few moments ago, this is a fee that pays for the handling and processing costs at a transfer station. And we prefer to have the haulers take waste back to a transfer station wherever possible, because that allows us to capture the recycling opportunity that we would not have if waste is all hauled directly to our disposal sites. An adjustment of this component is based not on a CPI indicator, but it is completely the county's discretion. And we have not made a change to this component in seven years to be exact, for one of the three haulers and 5 years for the other two haulers. So we are recommending a 5% increase at this time. There's one other change that we're recommending in the rate structure, and that applies only to Area 3, which is the Turlock Scavenger area. This is the area that was most recently put out to bid. And when Turlock was awarded the franchise for that area, they included a category of special services that was unique to them. And these are 7-day rental charges for commercial bins. So for things like you've decided that you're going to do a small remodeling project, or you're going to clean out the garage and you want to rent a bin for 7 days. And the rates were initially established when the franchise was awarded, and Turlock was required to keep their rates consistent for 31.8 months before they were sort of folded into the regular rate adjustment process. And what happened was when they first came up for their first year of an adjustment in 2012, it was this category was inadvertently left out. We all missed it. The hauler missed it. We missed it. And even when Hilton helped us last year set the new base rate, it went under the radar at that point too. So it was brought to our attention last year after we set rates, and so we're proposing that we basically true up that category of rates according to the same CPI adjustments that were made in 2012 and 2013. So on the next slide, it shows you the change in rates, and they are obviously more significant. But you'll probably recall that in 2012, when the waste energy contract was renegotiated, there was a significant increase in that year. And that's the largest reason for the percentage increase here. And so that brings us to our staff recommendation, which is to approve the recommended adjustments to the Stanislaus County franchise maximum rates for refuse collection areas, franchise areas 1 through 4. And with that, we would be happy to take any questions that you might have.
Any questions to staff? See any? Anybody from the audience wish to comment on this item? Okay, let's bring it back to the board for action. Comments from the board? Motion?
I'll make a motion to approve all staff recommendations.
Okay, is there a second to that motion? Seconded by Supervisor Keyser. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion is carried 5-0. Okay, we will now move to our 9-10 scheduled matter.
Good evening, good morning, Chairman DeMartini, members of the board, Mr. Risen, Mr. Doring, Angela Freitas, Planning Director. With me this morning is Juan Gonzalez, Associate Planner, and Danny Ferreira, Supervising Building Inspector. The item before you is a substantial amendment to the Neighborhood Stabilization Program, NSP Program 1 and 3 Annual Action Plans. Stanislaus County is the lead entity of the Stanislaus Urban County has been awarded a total of $13,920,420 in NSP funds since 2009 to mitigate the negative effects of foreclosed properties. The funds may be used to acquire land and property, to demolish or rehabilitate abandoned properties, and or to offer down payment and closing cost assistance to low and moderate income home buyers of NSP properties. Since 2009, the Urban County has expended a total of $18.25 million of NSP funding that includes program income that's been generated from the resale of acquired properties to income-eligible persons. At this time, all NSP expenditure deadlines have been met, and a fund balance of $2.25 million remains available to be spent on NSP-eligible activities. And while foreclosure activities have decreased, blight from abandoned and dangerous buildings has increased. The Planning Department's Building Permits Division currently administers an Abandoned and Dangerous Buildings Program, an ADB program. The ADB is responsible for investigating and addressing structures that pose a threat to the health and safety of the community. A dangerous building is a structure which has been determined to have lost 75% or more of its value due to neglect and or damage and is no longer fit for human habitation. The ADB operates with the first step being to try to obtain voluntary compliance from the property owner to address the issue. The last resort is demolition and removal of the structure by the county. For a single-family dwelling, the average cost of a demolition and removal is just over $8,000. Cost recovery is done in the form of liens placed on the property. And in the past, the constraints to moving more projects through has been staffing and funding. Before you is an example of an ADB structure or a structure that has been removed through the ADB program. This was on Las Vegas and it was demolished earlier this month. Hopefully to be demolished this week. The one before you is on John Street. These are examples of what the ADB program is removing as far as blight. NSP allows for the demolition of structures declared to be a nuisance, blight, by the county. And the integration of the NSP funds with the existing ADB program will allow for a proactive, non-complaint-driven approach to the removal of abandoned and dangerous buildings by providing the funding that's needed to support both the demolition and associated administrative activities. Up to 10% of NSP program funds may be used for demolition activities. As of May 31st of this year, there's $2 million in funding available. The demolition target areas for the demolition activity would remain as the same as the NSP 1 and NSP 3 programs. Those areas are listed in Attachment 2 of your board report and include unincorporated community areas and the urban county partner cities. The substantial amendment adding demolition as an eligible activity is a third amendment to NSP 1 that's adding Chapter 6, Section 6.1, and is the second amendment to NSP 3 adding Section 7.1H. At this time, staff is recommending that the board close the 30-day public comment period and conduct a public hearing and approve the substantial amendment to NSP 1 and 3 annual action plans, adding demolition as an eligible activity and authorizing staff to submit to HUD. If there's any questions, we're available.
Is there any questions of staff?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Supervisor Issa.
On the NSP program, cities receive some money too, right?
Correct. Our partner, Urban County Cities, Oakdale, Waterford, Houston, Ceres, Newman, and Patterson.
Okay, so they're the ones that are eligible
Yes. For
this demolition. Is there any way we can, you know, I talk about these road crews, and this is really a stretch, I know. But when we take the folks that are in diversion programs out, we can't hire the deputy to supervise them. We've been struggling, and then we have some free labor that's available for cleanup. It's not demolition, but is there any way to stretch the program to include, because that would get us more bang for our buck,
mm-hmm.
utilizing, although that's, again, not demolition. That is in cleanup when I look at these atrocious houses here. I know, that was a setup. Anyways, I figure I know the answer to that. Modesto, do they have a similar program?
Yes. Modesto is using their NSP homes to work with their abandoned homes program.
Okay. Thank you.
Supervisor Withrow.
So we said the average, Angela, cost to is about $8,000 or so, and we have $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just doing the math here. It's almost 250 houses out there that we could, I mean, it sounds like that's a lot of money, and we should be able to do a lot of good here.
We should be able to do a lot. We're hoping to affect some change. Our biggest constraints with the existing program has just been staffing and the funding. I mean, we only had $150,000 in that case. We're hoping that we can leverage this funding and better staff up and just get out there and just really take care of some of these problem properties.
Do we know how many are out there? I mean, so we've got money maybe to do 250 of them here, it looks like, for this year. Do we know how many were?
I'm going to let Danny speak on this. I don't know that we have an exact count.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good morning, Supervisor Chairman DeMartini, CEO Risen, the board, and Council Doring. We have 13 active cases right now, and those are specifically off of reaction or reactive cases, so complaints that come in. We have not gone through these communities and drove the streets to find out exactly what is out there. We get these specifically on complaints from the fire department that they've had multiple fires or from the community themselves.
Okay. I mean, it'd be great if we got out there and promoted this a little bit. We have this funding, and we all know we've got these in all of our districts, these houses. Let's get it out there that we've got money to do this now. And
fire department's probably...
Local fire departments are probably a great place to advertise.
Yes. We've met with the Chiefs Association and, you know, talked to them and told them, you know, who to contact, when, where, and why. Their complaint was multiple fires over, you know, the exact same address. You know, some of these houses will burn two or three times, and they're expending funding, you know, putting these out. So we thought this was a great opportunity to use, you know, funding across the two departments.
One last thing, sorry. You said City of Modesto, when you listed all the partners, City of Modesto wasn't included in that, is that right?
The City of Modesto is not one of the urban county partners, but they received NSP individually, and they have used their NSP funding to operate a very similar program.
So they've got the same opportunities within their program that we're talking about here?
Yes.
Okay.
And Supervisor Monteith?
Well, I just want to point out a question that I asked in case anyone else would. I looked at the list, and I thought perhaps those that were listed numerically were a preference of order, which it isn't.
No,
and these are all qualified. This is not a preference of order. I just wanted to point that out to people because I asked that same question to begin with.
Yes.
And the other thing is we're all confronted with burned out homes in our areas, and I represent in the airport district. I know the challenge we have there. And this is, well, an excellent program, and I think it's going in the right direction. Thank you.
Any further questions to staff before I open the public hearing? Okay, seeing none, I'll open the public hearing. Any member of the audience wishing to comment on this item, now would be the time. Okay, seeing no one, close public hearing, bring back the board for action.
So move.
And motion to approve staff recommendations, I assume?
Yes.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, motion's been made and seconded. We approve staff recommendations. Mm-hmm. Any further discussion? Okay. All those in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion's carried.
Thank you.
Excuse me, 5-0.
Thank you.
We will now move to correspondence.
This board has received a letter from Emanuel Medical Center regarding Tenet Healthcare Corporation's acquisition of Emanuel Medical Center, Inc., located at 825 Belmont Avenue in Turlock, California. Approximately 1,130 employees will permanently separate from service on July 31, 2014. And it is expected that most, if not all, of the affected employees will be offered employment by Tenet. And affected employees will receive 60 days advance notice of their separation from EMC.
Okay, we're approved the Alliance WorkNet and the Stanislaus Economic Development Workforce Alliance.
This board has received a letter from the Houston Unified School District regarding their intent to sell surplus property on the corner of 7th Street and Whitmore Avenue in Houston, California.
Approve the assessor and the chief executive office.
This board has received the claim as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claim and refer to the chief executive office, risk management division. Are there any board supervisors' reports? Supervisor Chiesa.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to report out yesterday, Supervisor Withrow, myself, County Council, Doring, Keith Boggs, Jamie Akers. I'm missing someone. Am I missing? Oh, Walt Ward and Sarge Green had a meeting up in San Joaquin County with our counterparts, a couple of supervisors, and the makers of the two legislative bills on water, the Dickinson bill and the Pavley bill, and those came out of AQUA and the California Water Foundation, and we specifically are going through governance, how to set up governance, because there's some things that maybe necessarily are not that good for counties. A good discussion. The bills are being heard today, and then they're going to convene next week in Sacramento, probably because there's multiple bills, and the governor also has some ideas, but they're going to have to sit down and settle the differences. But we had some very good discussion, very complicated, and I'm glad that our water experts were there at the time. We'll continue to keep you updated on those discussions.
And any other Board of Supervisors reports? I have one thing I'd like to just to bring up. The year is almost over for the Stan Sara review of the year. As of the beginning of this month, we had $1.75 billion. It's a new record high. And our earnings for the first 11 months of this year were $210 million. And that is after paying $85 million in benefits. So we still have $210 million. Our return on investment so far is 16.02%. And this year looks like another good month. Rough estimates is that at the end of this month, it's take us a little while to calculate, we will be approximately 82% funded. Okay, legislative and fiscal management report, Mr. Risen?
No report.
Okay, we will now adjourn to closed session, Mr. Doring.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have closed session to have conference with labor negotiator pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. The agency negotiators are Stan Risen, Nancy Bronstein, and Jody Hayes, and the labor organizations are those listed on the agenda. Additionally, we have conference with legal counsel to discuss existing litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision D1. It involves one case, Teresa Gunter versus County of Stanislaus County Superior Court, case number 684825. Do not expect to report out on either of those matters, and it would be appropriate to ask if there are any public comments on either of those matters.
Any public comment? Okay, seeing none, we will adjourn to closed session.